Welcome to Corritos. This week, diversity of thinking. The questions this cast answers are, why is diversity important? How can we benefit from diversity? And why should I care about diversity when I'm not a manager?
Folks, in October, just a few weeks ago, we finished our IM conference. And I've told several groups, I think I tweeted as well, that it was the single best conference I've ever attended. And I've been doing this for 30 years. You'd like to think we would get better at things, but there was something special about this group. And you can still get in on the fun. For $1,500, you can get access to all the videos of all the presentations from all of the executives that came to talk to their fellow executives and managers and some individual contributors as well about their experiences and what they've learned across the spectrum from leadership to foresight to managing down in the weeds to how to take over a difficult organization and on and on and on. An outstanding value at half the price of attending in person.
Organizations are being held to account even more, ever more, increasingly for their actions as well as their words about diversity. And that's a good thing. People should not be able to say words and not follow through with actions and get the praise for the words, nor should we be letting people get away with not putting action into place for diversity. Apart from anything else, research has shown that an increase in diversity increases organizational success. So the more diverse your organization, the better the organization will do. And therefore, the better all of the individuals do and the better society does all of it. You know, it all works.
The rising tide lifts all boats.
Exactly. And the vast majority of us agree that the big isms like racism and sexism and ageism and so on are antithetical to effective organizations and societies. And yet there's one type of diversity that we come up against every day and we never talk about nurturing, and that's diversity of thought. So we're going to cover that today.
Yeah. So our outline for today is we're going to talk about diversity being an asset. So we'll touch on that. Hold your judgment, support diverse thinking, and take advantage of diversity.
So we'll start by trying to convince everybody that people who don't think like them are still an asset. So diversity is an asset. So research, as I just said, and our own practical experience says diversity of thought in teams makes those teams more successful. And the opposite, if you think of it, sometimes it's easier to prove the negative, right? So the opposite, where the group is all the same, has been shown to have contributed to the really big disasters in the world. Things like the Bay of Pigs and Pearl Harbor and the Space Shuttle Challenger and corporate disasters like Enron were caused because either everybody thought the same or people weren't willing to speak up about the different thoughts that they had, whether that was about the ethics of something or the way to do something or, you know, whether or not we were being safe. People didn't say those things. In fact, when I was looking up for examples of this, one of the examples given is the collapse of Swissair. And before Swissair collapsed, it was known as the flying bank because it was so secure. It was just, you know, take it to the bank. And then it collapsed. And part of the reason it collapsed was because the board had only finance professionals and politicians on it. And their reason for that was, well, we're not running the airline. We're not operationally running the airline. Therefore, right, we don't need to understand airline operations. Well, maybe that was true, but you just thought the board of an airline would benefit from someone who had a clue about airlines and maybe someone who represented their customers rather than just banks and politicians. The fact that they couldn't see things coming because their worldview was limited to what they knew. What's that saying about we don't know what we don't know? That is what contributed to the collapse of the company.
Yeah. And given those examples, I mean, specifically, you know, the Swissair one, I mean, given that the company collapsed, it's easy to think, well, yeah, in hindsight, right?
Yeah.
Of course that was a mistake, or of course they were wrong. But in the day-to-day, in our routine, we dismiss others' perspective on work all the time, either because it's, you know, it takes additional time, or in the moment we just feel like that doesn't make any sense, right? Working with other people you don't think or who don't think the way that you do is hard. You have to be willing to kind of be open-minded. And it doesn't matter where, or I guess what led to their thought process, right? Or why they think the way that they think. It's important because, you know, whether they are coming to this decision or this thought because of their race or their gender, their age, or their upbringing, it doesn't matter. Or it could be just that that's the way they're wired, mm-hmm. right? But we communicate in ways that make the most sense to us, because most of the time it doesn't occur to us that what we're looking at can be seen in other ways.
Yeah, so we've got a fun-ish example for this. Sarah, who runs our public conference business, was ordering swag for our M conference event, which is actually, if you're listening to this in November, it's just happened. You missed it. Come to the website and find out about next year's, because it's going to be awesome and you've missed out. Sorry. But she was ordering swag for the M conference attendees, and she's going to get our logo printed on it. And it's a silver and black version of the Executive Tools logo. So if you're looking mm-hmm. at the Career Tools logo, as you listen to this, the Career Tools logo has 5 blue balls and an orange one. And the Executive Tools one has some blue balls and a silver ball and a red ball. And so the instruction for Sarah that she gave to the printers was all the balls should be filled except the top one. Right, the top one's a
right,
red one,
right.
All the rest
because they
blue.
Couldn't do all the colors.
Yes, they couldn't do the balls.
It had to be monochromatic.
Right, it had to be a silver and black representation. So what came back was what half of us expected, 5 silver balls and 1 silver circle outline, an unfilled ball. But the rest of us, when she posted it on Slack, there were like 5 people who went, oh, it looks good. And the other 5 went, wait a minute, that's backwards. And we just had this conversation where, what do you mean it's backwards? And they're like, no, it should be 5 filled in ones and 1 silver one. And then the other people were like, no, it should be 5 holes and 1 filled in one. It was back. We were going backwards and forwards. And,
yeah.
And as hard as I'm finding it now to describe what it looked like, was as hard as it was for us to describe what we wanted and what we thought we were describing.
And each of us respectively, each of the groups that thought that had the 2 different schools of thought didn't understand why there was so much confusion.
No.
Right?
We were like, how could you understand that differently?
Yeah, it came down to what we each perceived as filled uh-huh. meaning, right? Rather than, you know, I mean, I thought that filled was 1 full silver circle, but someone on the other side said, well, no, filled is a silver outline with black in the middle, filling it in.
Yeah.
And we both, you know, both groups were like, why would you think that? That doesn't make sense. That's not what filled means.
No, it was
hilarious.
It was hilarious. And it would have been so much easier if we all thought the same way. But, and it's a simple example, but it just goes to show 10 people, 2 different ways of looking at the same, exactly the same words and exactly the same image.
And we talk about this all the time in trainings. We talk about how we define words, mm-hmm. right? And those definitions of words and how that plays into communication. You know, when we do our ECCs, one of the exercises we go through is the words and words that you think connote or have a connotation of, you know, this, or have a societal definition that we all kind of think of, mm-hmm. but that doesn't necessarily, that's not always the correct definition, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And some people are, you know, grammar nerds, and some people mm-hmm. aren't. And some people will use literally to mean figuratively, and other people are really annoyed they changed that in the dictionary. So,
yes.
And one of the things we do as humans is we use shortcuts for communication, because communication is so hard. And when the other person knows the shortcut, that makes it really effective. So for example, if you describe something as brick box sized in an agile environment, everybody knows it's a bit bigger than, I can't even remember what the term is, because I can never remember it. It's bigger than that, but less than that. But someone in agile knows how many hours it is, how complicated it is, how many people it will take, how likely it is to throw up some problem that you haven't thought of, and how likely it is that any one of their team members would be able to handle that task. But if you take that to marketing or to me, they don't know what a bread box is. And not only do they not know what a bread box is, they're confused about why you're even talking about bread boxes.
Well, and maybe it's fresh because I started a new job this year. So I think of starting a new job or being immersed in a new culture. You know, I don't know. We have all of our projects internally are named after golf courses. If I don't know what the context is, just Spyglass doesn't tell me anything, right? I don't know what that means, but everyone else does, right? And so that type of, shortcut is a perfect example of how you can be completely left out in the cold, right?
And we use it personally as well, because, I live in a foreign country, foreign to me. Like, sometimes I say things like sticky back plastic or here's one I made earlier. And nobody knows what I'm talking about. Mark does, because I've told him. But nobody knows what I'm talking about. Whereas everybody my age in the UK just went, Blue Peter, and they know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's not just in companies. It can be age. It can be where you grew up. It can be how you grew up. It can be words that were used in your family, but not in others. And if we all used the same language and they all thought the same way, perfect, but we don't.
I have a really small, and I'll make it quick, example of this. My first job ever was scooping ice cream. Like, that was my first tax paying job. And I'm on the West Coast, but apparently on the East Coast, sprinkles, right? Rainbow sprinkles or chocolate sprinkles are called Jimmies. I had never heard that term before, ever. And so I had a line of people and I was making their ice cream. And one of them, the person whose ice cream I was making said, and I'm going to get, can I get Jimmies? And I said, oh, sure.
Who's Jimmy?
I thought what they meant was the gentleman who's next in line, he's also going to pay for him.
Yes.
So I hand him the ice cream and I go, what can I gift you, Jimmy? And the guy, they're not even affiliated. The guy goes, who's Jimmy? What do you mean? I have no idea. And he goes, no, I wanted Jimmy's on my ice cream. I was like, and it took, you know, 3 minutes to figure out what we were talking about, because I didn't know that particular conversational shortcut. I didn't know that that's what, you know, sprinkles were called. For those of you who call them Jimmy's.
And for everybody in the UK, that's hundreds and thousands to us.
Really?
Yes. That's what sprinkles are.
What?
Because there's hundreds and thousands of them.
That is that very good point.
It's funny. So, but we've established, hopefully, that diversity is beneficial, but difficult. So what do we do? And we can do something. I would like it that everybody thinks like me, but we can't do that. And you don't have to be a manager or part of the organizational hierarchy to do this. This is the important bit. You know, diversity tends to be one of those, oh, it's a program within the company, or there's a chief diversity officer and it's their job. I would argue with that. I think diversity is everybody's job, but this is a very concrete way that you can do something as an individual in your team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Folks, we continue to get requests from clients to travel before the end of the year 2021. In light of things starting to pick up and people coming back to the office, if you think your organization might be interested in talking to us about some effective manager, effective communicator, effective hiring manager training, we'd be happy to come on site. Just reach out to Maggie at manager-tools.com.
So the next part of our cast is hold your judgment. The first step to allowing more diversity to be expressed on your team is to reserve judgment, right? Hold that judgment. When we present work that we are convinced is right, right? Or that we've, frankly, maybe put in some time and effort and, you know, we're invested in it. There's a natural tendency to be averse to criticism. If someone, you know, says, oh, well, you know, I'm not so sure about this part, is to immediately, our natural instinct is to get defensive. And that can stifle the exact diversity of thought that we're going after, right? We want people to be able to bring those things up.
Even somebody having a better idea than you in a brainstorm can make your hackles rise and just go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's why when we do brainstorming and all of our podcasts on brainstorming are focused on volume, right? You don't have to defend the idea during the brainstorm, right? Just
write
ideas
stuff down
on paper.
Exactly. Yeah. And one way to circumvent the natural wiring, which causes us to defend our own work, is to take notes verbatim as you would during an interview. So one of the things we teach during the Effective Hiring Manager Conference is write down exactly what the candidate says, not what you think about what they say. And partly that's for record-keeping purposes, but while you're writing down what is said, you cannot also be thinking about your conclusions. It's just two lines of thought that can't happen at the same time. If you're writing down exactly what's said, like, I don't know if you had this at school, but we used to have dictation where the teacher would dictate and we had to write it in,
oh, yeah,
in handwriting, you know, and you had to write exactly the words. This is what we're doing. And the concentration required for that is sufficient that you cannot also be drawing conclusions. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, when someone's giving you feedback about what your work, writing down exactly what they're saying prevents you reacting in the moment.
Wendy, I was telling you about this example that I thought of when I read this in the cast. I saw this great TED Talk, and it was a filmmaker who made a documentary. That was kind of a, you know, political documentary, so I'm not going to go into the details. But the filmmaker, it was a small budget. Basically, they took one side of a political issue, and what they were doing in the documentary, the whole premise for the film was that they were going to go meet people and talk to people who had an opposing view, mm-hmm. kind of a meet my enemy type of, you know, documentary. And so they went and they sat down and they talked to these people and had some, you know, good discussions. And they said, well, because of the lack of budget, right, that they're not only doing all the interviewing, doing most of the camera work, they're also the ones doing the editing. And something that I didn't even really think of when you make a movie is you have to do the subtitles, mm-hmm. right? You have to type that out. And the director or this filmmaker said, a very interesting thing happened to me as I was doing the editing and as I was putting together the subtitles for this film is I was reviewing some of the conversations that I had with these folks. And as I was typing, I don't get to type what I heard them saying. I have to type what they actually say.
Right.
And they said it was very interesting because I remember sitting across from them in that moment and thinking they're saying this, being that, you know, the people who are on my side of this particular issue are incorrect or are wrong or they're invalidated in some way. When I typed out what they were actually saying, that's not what they were saying at all. They were saying, hey, yes, and there is another group of people who are disproportionately affected that don't have the same resources or the same level of, you know, respective, you know, outrage or people talking about it. So they were not disagreeing, they were agreeing and also highlighting that there are other people who face things, you know, like this particular political issue. So I just thought it was really interesting because only when we're forced to actually capture the words being said, are we able to maybe step outside of our, you know, our thought process or our natural characterizations of what people say.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting.
And anytime you report anything to anyone, you always say, well, they said this, and it's a shortcut. It's a characterization. It's not the words they said. Because, yeah. you know, even in interviews, people don't do this or even anything close to it. They write down what they think the other person said or what they felt about what the person said, both of which are not what they said. And, mm-hmm. and it's normal that any disagreement with your position will cause you to view any opposing argument with negativity, right? It's your work. You are going to feel, well, that can't be right, because if it was right, I would have done that. But if you capture just your own thought process or your emotion, it doesn't give you that space to consider the alternatives or reconsider your own point of view. Because all you've got in your head when you go back to your desk is, oh, I was annoyed. And right. and now you don't know what they were suggesting. And if you want to build diversity of thought, you're going to have to learn to listen to exactly what people say and not how you interpret it. Mm-hmm. And introducing that brief neutral space, that moment, increases your chances of fostering diversity amongst your team. Because if you don't snap the moment somebody makes a suggestion, they're more likely to make another suggestion.
Exactly. And this wouldn't be career tools if we didn't give you some words to say, right? And so, in that moment, you would say something that allows you to take the time to think about the input without actioning or implementing, right? So something like, thank you. I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I'm going to take this away and I'll work on it some more.
I'll take this into consideration, meaning I will consider it. Not I will do it, but I will consider it.
Right.
And if you want feedback, if you want to make things better, if you want to hear other people's thoughts, you have to thank them for giving you the thought, whether you agree with it or not. Otherwise, people stop doing it. And the point of having diverse thought is that anyone might have the right idea. And it's entirely possible that you did have the right idea first time around, and you were right. The problem is that we all believe that our ideas are best just because we had them.
Mm-hmm.
And getting input and giving yourself the space to really listen to the input helps you be more accepting of the possibility that another idea is better.
Right.
We were designing some web pages yesterday. There was me, Mark, Mike, Paul, and Alex. And Alex had drafted something, and the word on the screen was invalid. And we were saying, if you're a user, do you understand why it's invalid or what you have to do next? And Paul said, yes, but the definition is it's invalid. Yeah, okay, yes. But I'm thinking from the user's perspective. And then I said, oh, well, you could get one of those little eye things, you know, that you see on screen and you click the eye and it tells you more about
it.
Oh,
yeah.
And then Mike said, no, what about one of those underline things where it underlines it and it says, why is this so, or why is this here sometimes on the web page? Yeah. And I was like, oh, no, that's better. But it took somebody saying, is everybody going to interpret invalid the same way we do? And then me having an idea about the eye, and then Mike adding to that for us to get somewhere that we all agreed was better. But we all had to put it away that my idea was the best one.
Well, it's so rare that the first idea or even the first couple of ideas ends up being the right idea or the best idea. Sometimes it's an iterative process. And if you don't share, you can't iterate.
Exactly.
Right? If you don't have steps,
yes,
there's no way to have, you know, improvements on those steps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our next point is support diverse thinking, which dovetails, I think, with our previous point. One reason for groupthink is that the members of a group value harmony or agreement over all other factors, even potentially effectiveness. Dissenting voices or alternative strategies are met with opposition, and those who voice those views are often silenced or dismissed, even if not actively, mm-hmm. right, or aggressively, but
sidelined quietly.
Yes.
You know, all of a sudden, you're not in the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like one of your examples, Enron, when bad news was voiced in Enron, it was summarily discounted, and any naysayers were promptly admonished for even voicing such concerns, disturbing the harmony of the agreed party line, right, was not permitted.
And so there was all this bad news that mounted up and mounted up and mounted up, and then they collapsed. Mm-hmm. So in order to encourage diverse thinking, you have to be willing to support it out loud. And that means in meetings, on public emails, in Slack channels, whatever you're using to communicate, you have to say things like great idea, or well done, or good point, or I agree, or I can see where you're coming from, or I'm glad you said that. You know, things that make people want to do more of sharing.
Right, exactly. None of those phrases says, I support your idea, or I think that's the idea we should go with. It's just an appreciation of mm-hmm. that person's idea without being married to it, right? You're just acknowledging that, which, you know, I think of even if the idea isn't great, right? The act of sharing that idea
exactly.
is great and is what we want to encourage, right. Which reminded me of a time I heard the word encourage, and I heard someone talking about the word encourage and what it means, and what it, we think of it as, you know, praise or something.
Telling,
you know,
someone they're great, right?
Yeah. But really what encourage means is to instill courage, right? Mm-hmm. It's about making or creating an environment where people feel that they can demonstrate courage, they can be courageous, they can, you know, share an idea without worrying that there are going to be, mm-hmm. you know, really bad repercussions.
You can do this.
Yeah, you know? Right.
You have good ideas and I want to hear them. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have the courage to say them because I want to hear them.
Right. And even if it's not a good idea, an idea is is great.
Exactly.
It's a good starting point.
When you're getting feedback on your own work, you can say things like, thank you, I didn't see that. Or, thank you, that's an alternative I hadn't considered. Yeah, thank you. It reminds you saying about encouraging. It reminds me of working with brand new grads who have never had a real job before, real in inverted commas. You know, and one of the things you have to get them to do is to talk up in meetings, and they won't because they're scared that they're going to say the wrong thing. And part of this is like, you have to talk, and yes, you're going to, 90% of what you say in the first 10 meters is going to be rubbish and someone's going to cut you down, but that's okay because all we want you to do at the beginning is talk.
Oh. Right. Absolutely. It kind of reminds me of, I think we have a cast, this was years ago. It was one of my favorites, though. I remember one specific point was about getting bad news. Mm-hmm. And the first thing you should say when you get bad news is, thank you.
Thank you for
bringing it to me. I think of this the same way.
Yes. Because otherwise, what people will do is not bring you the news that you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
They hide it. And
that
is not good for anybody.
Yeah. So the modern vernacular is, we want to make a safe space, right? We think of, you know, a safe space for team members to share ideas, share thoughts, share things that maybe go against the grain without that fear of negative repercussions. And the more that you encourage ideas, and again, you don't have to be the boss, right? Just the more that you are an encouraging voice that, you know, says, hey, good idea, or, oh, didn't think about it that way, right? The more and better ideas will come.
And it's better to say it out loud and publicly because other people will follow your example. But equally, you know, you can do it if you're on a meeting and you've got a Slack back channel, which I think most people have, you know, hey, you said that really well, or well done. I know he asked you questions, but I thought you presented it well, or whatever. You can still support people. So our final point is take advantage, because diversity of thought doesn't just show up in ideas. It shows up in the way that we think about and talk about people and things and abstract concepts. And the possible diversity of thought is infinite, as many as there are people, but there are some common frameworks that people use. So, for example, some people think first about the task and some people think first about the people. Some people think from the bottom up and others think from the top down. Some people think about time going forwards and some people think about it going backwards. Some people think about the detail and other people think about the big picture. And again, how and why someone thinks the way they do doesn't matter. You don't need to understand someone's psychology in order to be able to work with them effectively and benefit from their way of thinking when it's different from yours. What you do need to do is have an appreciation for their way of thinking and be willing to accept and hear a different way of approaching something.
Yeah. One of the things I didn't even think about until you just said it was the time thing. Mm-hmm. I think of, there are people who are more task-focused and people who are more people-focused, and the bottom-up, top-down thing makes total sense. But the time thing, I never really thought about it. But there are absolutely, or there have been times I remember where I think of, I'm a big fan of David Allen, Getting Things Done, right? And his approach to project management is, well, what's the next action, right? What's the next thing, right? So just, linear, going forward, what's the next thing you need to do? But I heard someone on an M conference series call, I can't remember who it was, so I'm not going to give him credit and I feel terrible for it. But he said, we had this big undertaking that we had to do. And he said, what I did was I fast forward. I said, okay, so if we're at the end of this project and we're all standing around and we're high-fiving each other, what are we high-fiving each other for? It might have been Trevor. I'm not sure. But what are we high-fiving for, right? Starting at the end and working backwards, saying, okay, so what are we looking back on?
Right.
Right? What went well?
Instead of going forward, because you can go step by step by step and end up in entirely the wrong place.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it makes sense as you're going.
Exactly. And you need somebody who looks up, who has that kind of 5-mile view of, hey, we're going in the wrong direction here. And yet you also need somebody who will do the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, and just churn through those widgets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If we just have a North Star, that's great. But we got to know what the next step is to take.
Exactly. So, for example, for a big picture thinker, being asked about details is frustrating. I'm one of those. I'm like, Paul, can you just do this thing? And then Paul's like, yeah, but what about these people and these people and these people in this case and in that case and these things? And I'm like,
yeah.
And then I roll my eyes and then I realize he actually has a point and I didn't consider any of those things, but they're right. important. And I benefit from his both ability to see all those things and B, his willingness to say it, even though he knows I'm going to sigh and roll my eyes.
Right.
Paul, this is my public apology. because he makes sure that I don't miss important details and then I have to do rework, which is what happens to people who just go do things without thinking them through, like me. And in reverse, the detail-oriented people, like Paul, it's really frustrating for me to come to him and just go, hey, big picture, because it's like. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's the big picture thinkers who can sell that idea, who can draw out the dream to sell it to someone else in the organization or a customer or whatever. So both of you bring benefits. The right. problem is when you can't appreciate that and you're just frustrated with each other.
Right. I remember we recently went through some of our decks and we were making some edits and just kind of, you know, making sure things are fresh. And I asked Mark about something very, very particular, right? You know, I don't know, grammatical mm-hmm. or, you know, syntax related or something. And Mark said something that really struck with me. He said, no, just take that point out completely because that's not the point here. Uh-huh. That's not what we're trying to get, right? And so he had that macro 30,000 foot level view where I was in the weeds. I was, you know, focusing on these details that at the end of the day didn't matter because he knows, you know, he has additional perspective and he is looking at it from a different point of view.
And the deck is better for both of you.
Exactly.
If you're a big picture thinker and you need a spreadsheet test, you need a spreadsheet check. Gosh, that was harder to say than I thought. The detail-oriented person on your team is the person to ask to help you. And if you're a detail-oriented person who needs to make a presentation, go ask the big picture person, how would exactly. you sell this? Right.
Right. When you need help or you're allocating tasks to be done, you think about the way the rest of the team approaches problems, right? Is this a task problem or a people problem, right? And then who on your team thinks that way? Who has those strengths and who's better at that? And then you choose that person to help you rather than someone who's more similar to the way you think about things, right? We talk about that a lot in terms of team breadth, right?
Yes.
The breadth of skills on a team. It shouldn't be homogenous, like you mentioned earlier.
And working with someone the same as you is so much easier, but it's a worse result.
Right.
It's worth the work. Working on a diverse team is hard. Right? It requires more forbearance and more active communication than a team made up of people who are very similar. It can be more unstable and there can be more conflict because you don't understand each other as well. On the other hand, it's likely to be much more successful. So it's worth doing the work. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, everyone.